Coming up on Fronteras, we take you into the fields of New Mexico, where workers are cleaning out an ancient irrigation system.
Armando Rendon! ¡Que viva! Adrián Salazar! Julián Rendon!
These hand-dug ditches may help retain precious river water in times of drought. Just how many varieties of chili can one farmer grow?
Poinsettia, Fushima, Jimmy Nardello's, Shishitos, Olympus bell peppers, lipstick, pimentos.
Meet the farmers along the Southwest and the challenges they face maintaining the ancient irrigation system they love dearly. Those stories and more, but first, the news. This is Fronteras, a journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras was created via an unprecedented multimedia collaboration among several public radio stations. I'm Crystal Chavez. The major rivers of the Southwest are suffering as snow becomes increasingly scarce in the Rocky Mountains. Scientists who study climate change warn such conditions are the new normal. But there's encouraging news in northern New Mexico. In the first of a two-part report from the Changing America Desk, Monica Ortiz Uribe tells us about an ancient irrigation system.
Spring marks an annual ritual on the farms of northern New Mexico. It's when communities gather to clean out their local irrigation canals. In the town of Dixon, a team of 32 workers in bandanas and work boots shovel grass from the bottom of a dirt ditch. A supervisor stands above them and hollers a roll call.
Armando Rendon! Adrián Salazar! Julián Rendon!
These hand-dug ditches are called acequias. It's a style of irrigation that has survived hundreds of years since the arrival of the first Spanish settlers. The network of canals branch out from neighboring rivers like arteries. Cottonwoods, taller than telephone poles, grow beside them. Workers clear out debris the same way their ancestors did, with shovels and biceps. Once clean, the acequias can receive river water. This year, Supervisor Donald Atencio says the preparation is happening 2 to 4 weeks earlier than usual.
We are one of the last acequias cleaning out this year already. The other 7 ditches already have water inside their ditches.
The reason for the early start is the early snowmelt. Crowning this arid valley are the Sangre de Cristo Mountains. These silent giants feed the rivers below, but lately the rivers are going hungry. A quick trip up a nearby peak reveals why.
All right, so here we go on the Polaris Ranger. We're going to go see if there's some snow up here. Doesn't look like it.
The Polaris Ranger is a kind of ATV with a hard top. It's my ride up a mountainside west of Taos. It's ironic that in the center of New Mexico ski country, the ground is more brown than white. My driver is Wayne Sleep of the Natural Resource Conservation Service. A major part of his job is to measure snowpack.
2013, the snow season was terrible. Normally this time of year, the canyon that we're driving up would still be basically snowpacked.
The last 3 years in New Mexico have been the driest on record, with snowpack readings at 30% of normal. And it's not just here. Snowpack is down across the Southwest.
We look at 30-year periods of record for our averages. There's been some good years in there, but the overall trend has been dry.
Climate studies show the rate of global warming has accelerated in the last 30 years. In the Southwest, mountain snow melts into rivers like the Rio Grande and the Colorado and ends up in open-air reservoirs like Elephant Butte in New Mexico or Lake Mead in Nevada. On hot, windy days, these reservoirs act like a pot of boiling water.
We measure evaporation directly from the surface of the water.
Salim Bawazir is an engineering professor at New Mexico State University. He measures evaporation at Elephant Butte Reservoir.
We can say we're losing about 5 feet per year.
Enough to grow an acre of alfalfa. In times of drought, Bawazir says reservoirs are not the ideal place to store water. This is where the acequias of northern New Mexico may provide some relief. Because they are dug into the earth, they allow water to seep underground, where it can be stored for up to 3 months.
Hydrologically, of course, it's better to store water underground in northern areas because it's cooler, so you don't have evaporation.
Sam Fernald teaches water management at New Mexico State University. He's leading an ongoing study of acequias that shows they are helping mitigate the effects of climate change.
We can learn from these systems that have been adapted to water scarcity for hundreds of years how to have our own sustainable water management.
But despite their potential benefits, the future of acequias is not guaranteed. Many farmers are struggling to make a living off the land. I'm Monica Ortiz Uribe.
And we're going to continue talking about that ancient irrigation system in northern New Mexico. In the second of this two-part report from the Changing America Desk, Monica Ortiz Uribe finds how a growing interest in local food may be one way to ensure their future.
It's a beautiful spring day in the Embudo Valley of northern New Mexico, just south of Taos. The Embudo River runs east from here, then spills into the Rio Grande. Esteban Arellano points proudly to a handmade dam constructed of river rocks.
Yeah, this is the beginning of our acequia, Punta y Ciénaga.
The acequia is a hand-dug canal that diverts river water to small local farmers. Arellano is one of them. He's 66 years old, with thick gray eyebrows and a matching mustache. His ties to this land go way back.
The valley that we're in here, it's all part of a land grant given to the people here in 1725 by the King of Spain. And it was given to three people. I'm a descendant of one of them.
Even before the Spanish erected churches here, they built acequias. Some had been dug before them by Native Americans.
So these are the first really public works that were made in this country were the acequias.
Studies from New Mexico State University also show these acequias are good for the environment in times of prolonged drought. They help delay evaporation downstream by storing river water underground. But Arellano says other forces are undercutting the importance of acequias.
Before, people depended on acequia water for survival. Now, since they can go and buy everything at the stores, they're not taking care of the acequias, so the acequias are falling into disrepair.
It's also tough to make a living. Locals estimate a farmer's annual income starts at $20,000. Their plots rarely exceed 10 acres, and most farmers must get a second job in town. Others choose to sell their land, which can be very valuable.
We do see lands getting converted to subdivisions, and it's heartbreaking.
Paula Garcia heads the New Mexico Acequia Association, which advocates for the future of this ancient irrigation system.
Our economy and our policies around agriculture tend to favor larger scale production.
But then there are the exceptions.
Hey guys, say hello. That's my primo Johnny. That's my vecino Richard.
Matt Romero is a tall, dark-skinned guy with a mass of uncombed hair and a sweatshirt that reads grumpy. He's actually very nice. At his home near Dixon, he shows off his backyard greenhouse and his impressive collection of chili peppers.
Poinsettia, Fushima, Jimmy Nardello's, Shishitos, Olympus bell peppers, lipstick, pimentos.
Romero is a fairly rare example of an acequia farmer who makes a living entirely off the land. He sells a variety of produce at farmers markets, to a couple food co-ops, and 7 restaurants in Santa Fe. He did it the old-fashioned way.
I started with the only money I had in the bank. Started very tiny, made a little bit of money the first year, made some more money the next year, and kept reinvesting, bought this property.
Romero even hosts a summer internship program for young aspiring farmers, which he promotes with a video on his website.
This is the future for small farming in New Mexico and in the United States, is getting these youthful entrepreneurs who want to go into farming, give them the experience, and they'll become our next generation of farmers.
Despite major challenges, Paula Garcia of the New Mexico Acequia Association says acequia farmers may endure by responding to a growing demand for local food.
I am seeing like a resurgence at our farmers markets of people that are able to grow high-value crops on less acreage using very water-efficient technologies.
Acequia associations are recognized under the recently passed Farm Bill and can now apply for federal grant money. Also this year, the New Mexico State Legislature more than doubled financial assistance to acequias, allowing much-needed repairs to move forward. Reporting from Dixon, New Mexico, I'm Monica Ortiz Uribe.
there's still more Fronteras coming up. Stay tuned. We'll be back after a short break. This is Fronteras. I'm Crystal Chavez. Climate change has led to longer fire seasons with larger, more complex, and more costly fires. Last year, the National Forest Service and the Interior Department had to borrow $650 million from other federal programs to fund increased firefighting costs. Federal officials announced Wednesday a better budget plan. From Flagstaff, Laurel Morales reports.
Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack told reporters wildfires can have an impact on as many as 46 million homes and 70,000 communities along the urban-wildland interface. Over the last decade, Vilsack says the cost of fighting these fires has grown from 13% of the Forest Service's budget to 40% this year.
We've had to transfer and borrow from other fire and non-fire programs to cover suppression costs each year. And frankly, the solution is to treat fires the way we treat other natural disasters.
Vilsack and Interior Secretary Jewell have proposed providing funding for extraordinary conditions, creating a cap adjustment, a ceiling, not a funding target, to fight the most severe 1% of fires. Those fires account for 30% of the annual firefighting budget. Congress is considering a similar proposal. I'm Laurel Morales in Flagstaff.
Federal prosecutors in Texas and New Mexico are dealing with an unusual case. 10 drug smuggling crimes have been traced to a man from a Mennonite community in Mexico who is alleged to have duped the victims. Fronteras reporter Lorne Madelon has more from Chihuahua.
The seduction starts with a classified ad in the paper, one that 23-year-old Juan was fooled by. We're near Ciudad Cuauhtémoc, a Mennonite town in Mexico.
Si quieres trabajar, si tienes visa láser, eres residente americano. Contratación inmediata.
The man who placed the ad is from a 40,000-strong Mennonite community of ranchers and farmers. They're members of a conservative Christian church with European roots. Juan answered the ad, and a man called back.
Estamos pagando muy bien.
The man told Juan, I'll pay you $500 a week to drive my truck to the U.S. and back. Juan was making $70 a week as a security guard. The would-be employer, identified by victims and attorneys in the U.S. as David Geisbrecht, imports American farm equipment. It's now alleged that he ran narcotics. Juan thought the job offer was too good to be true. Let me think about it, Juan said.
Digo, no, pues, ¿sabe qué? Digo, déjeme la pienso.
He did, and then took the job.
None of the people had prior records. They were working people. When you see the ads that they were responding to, they were just trying to better their life.
That's Liz Rogers. She was the federal defender in West Texas, whose office represented Juan and five other Mexicans. The three other were arrested crossing into New Mexico.
Whenever the person that is a Mennonite that the government has identified, whenever he showed up, he could talk to them very professionally over exporting and importing agricultural equipment. And so it would be no wonder that they would believe it was a legitimate job.
It was anything but. When Juan hit the Texas border at Presidio, a customs agent told him to get out of the truck.
No, me dijo, ahorita te decimos.
They didn't tell me what was happening, he says. Then another customs officer approached.
Dijo, ahorita va a venir una persona de la DEA, dijo, a explicarte qué pasó y todo.
The officer said a DEA agent would explain everything. When that agent arrived, the conversation continued.
Y me dijo, él dijo, es que traías droga.
Are you carrying drugs, Juan was asked. He said no. He couldn't digest what he heard next.
Ya ella me dijo que traía lo que traía, traía 57 kilos de marihuana, dijo, en el tanque la gasolina.
The DEA agent told me I had 125 pounds of marijuana in the gas tank.
Y todo me sentí, se me quitaron las fuerzas de todo, porque pues yo nunca he andado en esas cosas. Y...
I couldn't move, I couldn't breathe. Again, Liz Rogers. She says one of the cases showed how sophisticated the operation was.
It was a big flatbed trailer, so they believe they're hauling empty, and the marijuana was hidden very professionally in an I-beam, welded in the I-beam of this big flatbed. And the only reason the government found it is because they have X-ray equipment that can find very well hidden marijuana.
At least seven of the people duped by Geisbrecht, including Juan, live near this cluster of Mennonite villages. One non-Mennonite here says his neighbors are hard-working farmers, but he says there are exceptions.
Plant some corn, sometimes plant some marijuana too.
For Juan and the others in New Mexico and Texas, the prospect of serious jail time was real. But as evidence tied to David Geisbrecht mounted, New Mexico dismissed all the cases. In Texas, three defendants were allowed to plead guilty to time served and immediately deported. In Juan's case, he's just happy to be home.
Me trataron muy bien, nunca me presionaron, nunca me golpearon.
They treated me well in the U.S., he says. No one pressured me, no one attacked me.
Yo contra contra los fiscales americanos, policía americana, no tengo nada. Dios los bendiga.
I have nothing against the U.S. prosecutors or police, he says. The alleged drug trafficker, David Geisbrecht, remains at large. I'm Lorne Madelon in Chihuahua.
Southern Californians may have to let their lawns go brown this summer because of the drought. But less than 100 miles down the coast, in Ensenada, the water situation is much more serious. Many of the city's 320,000 inhabitants now only get water to their taps 2 to 3 times a week. Frontera's reporter Jill Ruppelgold tells us that the governor has declared a state of emergency because of the shortage.
Ruth Valenzuela lifts a plastic sheet off the top of a water barrel in her tiny back patio. She fills it up, along with the washing machine when possible, on the rare days that her taps flow. She says the family has running water maybe 2 days one week, 2 days the next. When there is water, it's usually a trickle, she says. We can't even shower because there's not enough pressure to trigger the hot water heater. Ensenada gets most of its water from wells in the city and nearby valleys. Those wells are drying up. The city also has one small reservoir, but it has lost so much water that authorities recently had to take its pumping station offline. And this is the time of year when the city's water supplies should be flush. Winter wasn't winter. It wasn't cold. It didn't rain. This is Arturo Alvarado Gonzalez. He's the man in charge of getting water to the homes and businesses of Ensenada residents. He's only been on the job a few months, and they've been tough ones. In late January, he had to put the entire city on rotating water rations. There are a lot of complaints, he says, and with good reason. We understand that people are upset. They have a right to adequate service 24 hours a day. Ensenada's water supplies are currently enough to provide each resident with only about 43 gallons of water per day. In comparison, San Diego residents last year used more than 3 times that amount per person per day. Despite the hardship, Ensenada residents seem to be handling the scarcity pretty well. There haven't been any riots, no one's calling for authorities to resign. And of course, scarcity means profit for some businesses.
Mira, este tinaco es el tinaco de 1,100 litros.
Octavio Estrada shows me one of about 100 round plastic water tanks for sale at the large hardware store he manages in Ensenada. Sales have been brisk, he says, especially of the 300-gallon tanks. That'll hold over a family of 4 to 5 people for about 4 days, he says. We have to do big orders, he says, because we sold in just 2 months this year what we used to sell in 2 years. What's scary is Ensenada's water problems could get a lot worse as the normally dry, hot summer approaches. But authorities are working on a plan. Two engineers drove me out to see it. That sound you hear is the rusted top of a well. We've come out here a couple of kilometers outside of Ensenada on a very rough dirt road. And this well is Ensenada's hope for resolving its water problems in the short term. The State Public Utilities Commission says there's enough water underground here to get people's taps running again for the summer, enough to stop the rationing. But first, they need to lay pipes to get water from the well to the city. They need to install electricity and improve the road. Longer-term solutions are more complicated and more costly. Ensenada wants to build several desalination plants, and it wants to tap into the Colorado River water that currently supplies Mexicali, Tecate, and Tijuana. These plans have been on paper for years, but Ensenada leaders hope the drought and the state of emergency will help convert them into liquid reality. In the meantime, residents like Ruth Valenzuela are seeking out their own solutions.
Lo que estamos planeando entre mi esposo y yo es comprar
Valenzuela says she and her husband plan to buy a tinaco, one of those big water tanks on sale at the hardware store. She doesn't know how much they cost, she says, but it doesn't matter. We need it now. Reporting from Ensenada, I'm Jill Replogle.
Five Southwest rivers made America's most endangered rivers list this year. They are the San Joaquin, the Upper Colorado, the Gila, the White Rivers, and San Francisquito Creek. From Flagstaff, Laurel Morales reports.
The environmental group American Rivers highlights 10 rivers each year that are at a crossroads where key decisions will determine their fates. This year, the San Joaquin River in Central California is listed as the most endangered because of its outdated management that leaves communities vulnerable in the face of a drought crisis. The Upper Colorado was listed as the second most endangered. The Bureau of Reclamation reported that by 2060, the entire basin will drop more than 3 million acre feet. Ken Neubecker is a spokesman for American Rivers.
We just don't feel that there is really enough water left to satisfy all of the needs that are within the Colorado Basin, much less for export to support growth on the Front Range.
Colorado's governor is working on the first statewide water plan. Last year, the entire Colorado River was in the number one spot on the American Rivers survey. I'm Laura Morales in Flagstaff.
You've been listening to Fronteras, a journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras is a collaboration of public radio stations along the Southwest. The theme music was composed by Charanga Cakewalk. I'm Texas Public Radio's Crystal Chavez. Thank you for listening.